Yael Osowski with the Consumer Choice Center, the global grassroots movement for consumer choice, back with us at consumerchoicecenter.org. Yael, how goes it this morning?
You know, it's good. I got to enjoy Christmas in the Carolinas, just north of you guys, up near Charlotte. So I got to enjoy, you know, I think one day of super nice weather, then it got cold, and it wasn't fun, but I did have a great time shopping, going to Bass Pro Shops, you know, enjoying everything the Carolinas can give me. So I had a good time there.
I mean, just ample selection of all different sorts of things up and down the aisles of a Bass Pro Shop, at a grocery chain. I mean, things that you're not necessarily afforded where you call home, huh?
Not at all. That's why American abundance is a very good thing, and we should continue to fight for it, whatever we do, because this is just something that you just don't have in the rest of the world. So Americans are very lucky, and we should really cherish it.
I mean, that one of those things that, and I understand, hey, if you've got fewer choices, you may be a bit more appreciative, right, of what you have, maybe the quality of the product. But you think overall, the average American just doesn't realize how good they have it, even if they are of the even lower middle income, socioeconomic status here in our country.
Yeah, I think there's generally a lot of pessimism. You know, you might see some prices that are higher than they were, you know, a year ago, and we lived through inflation. We saw what that was like, and a lot of people are complaining. But if you actually just look at the amount of money that people make in their homes, how much they're able to hold and not have to send to the government, Americans are incredibly well off. There's a reason that we are the richest society in the world, is because we tend to have lower levels of government spending as compared to other countries. You might not believe it, but it is true. And our dollars go further and faster because we have an innovative economy with tons of choices. And that means it's a huge benefit for the average consumer and the average citizen. We just don't really sit down and realize it each and every day because everyone's dealing with their own problems or issues. But comparatively, we are the global 1% right here in the great old U.S. of A.
Well, not necessarily a terrible thing to step back every now and then, even with the headwinds that you may be facing here in a new year, maybe a credit card bill that you're going to have to pay off here from the Christmas time, to say, hey, okay, I wonder what it looks like elsewhere around the world. Well, we've got a guy elsewhere around the world telling us that maybe we should look in the mirror, put a smile on our face every now and then, because it's not as bad as we might think it might be, despite what you hear on the news or what you might be going through on an individual basis. Grand scheme of things, yes, we've got it pretty good. Who has it better than we do here on the Grand Strand, in particular here this morning? I had no idea that you actually had penned this article from RealClearPolitics.com, but I combed through it a week or so back when the newly released food pyramid came out from Health and Human Services and Secretary RFK Jr., and I'm like, hey, more protein, more veggies, more fruits, I'm all in. It's pretty much what our diet consists of day-to-day in our household anyway, yet less processed foods and sugars. Not sure about the new alcohol recommendations, Yael, that they've put forth through the federal government, but nonetheless, you feel that there might be a little bit of a conflict of interest from what we're hearing from Health and Human Services and the secretary who is guiding the way to make America healthy again.
Yeah, so this article came out right before the holidays. So, you know, as many Americans were fueling up their cars to go visit their loved ones, or, you know, pre-ordering all those things for their Christmas meal when I had the article out, and then we got the new food pyramid here just a couple days, weeks ago. So look, I will say the realfood.gov, first off, it's a beautiful website. It looks great. We've got some great designers now. So whoever made the Obamacare website, they've been let go, and we've got better people in there, which is great. The actual food pyramid as a guideline, much better. This is good. Let's get proteins, healthy fats. Let's get people eating real food. Totally agree. I think where RFK is perhaps one of the more troublesome members of the cabinet is, look, he's put a lot of things in MAGA at risk. And I know it's hard for a lot of people to see that day to day, but it's just really true. This is someone who ran for the Democratic candidacy to become president, then went for independent, and then joined sort of the MAGA coalition in order to get this position where he is now. The issues with RFK is he is a Democratic trial attorney who still has controlling interest or much interest in law firms that are suing companies, that are suing industries, and they're launching active lawsuits across the country. He has not yet gotten rid of those stakes in his partnership which I think is very problematic. If we look at the big lawsuit of the city of San Francisco against Fruit Loops and Coca-Cola and a lot of processed food companies, that is done by Morgan & Morgan. RFK is still a partner there, and he is giving them the blueprint and the playbook. So it is very troublesome, I think, to have RFK in that position. There's a lot of things. I'm not even talking about vaccines, right? I'm talking about those conflicts of interest. I'm talking about some of the AI-generated reports that his MAHA commission has put together that really embarrassed the president. We're talking about the Tylenol stuff that went through a couple of months ago, which really embarrassed Trump. I think there's just a hodgepodge. There's a lot of very good, smart people in the Trump orbit who could run HHS and do better. And that's the general argument for why I believe that MAGA should move on from RFK, and we can actually make America healthy again in a better way.
All right, you're looking for change at the top in terms of leadership because, as you highlighted, there appears to be some conflict of interest and potential kickbacks that this guy might be earning from these different lawsuits that have been filed around the country. Having said that, though, go back to, say, June of 2024 in the build-up to the presidential election cycle, Trump widely underwater, right, with mainly women in particular, right, and this whole MAHA movement spearheaded by who, Yael? Well, suburban, mainly white women who tend to not necessarily like the ins and outs and the rhetoric of Donald Trump day to day, all in on the RFK Jr. train, right? Those women that I see on Instagram and that I'm even friends with in various neighborhoods around the community in which I live in. So there's no question, right? He gave him a cabinet spot by virtue of an endorsement, which then maybe swayed a few of those suburban white moms to vote for Trump and not necessarily go the other direction last cycle.
Yeah, and look, I don't know how measurable the RFK bump was to Trump. Perhaps there are some numbers there. But again, you have to think about where RFK come from. He came from a wealthy Democratic family, and those ties that he has had as an environmental lawyer for many years did not just fade away. And you also have to think about, RFK coming into this position, and there is obviously a contingent of Make America Healthy Again people. That is a class of people. It is a contingent who are going to reliably vote and who are very interested in the political process. I just see that in the RFK method of doing this and translating it into policy, he's very much taking the normal Democratic agenda of depriving consumers of choice, of trying to just side everything against innovation and great things that come from the market. And that is overall just not what MAGA, it's not what Trump, it's not what Republican politics, it's not what an innovative brand of political action in 2026 should be. And I think that's the kind of core of the argument. There's a lot of things that, we're only 1 year in. There's probably going to be other stuff. I think if you look at Dr. Oz and what he's been doing with Medicare and Medicaid fraud, that's actually very good. That's probably where a lot of the bureaucratic focus should be. RFK shouldn't sit there every day and just talk about the American diet, but actually think about those $600 billion a year that we're kind of losing through some of these Medicare, Medicaid fraud programs. There's a lot there. And I just don't know if RFK is laser focused enough on that. I'd love to see it, so maybe we'll give him a little bit of a mulligan. But still, I think there's a lot of reasons to still remain skeptical.
And on the back end of that, as you highlighted, right, he still has a direct interest, right, in some of these law firms that are bringing up these suits and sharing information through his role as the secretary of HHS to maybe help make their case. Would he be potentially in line to get some of those dollars should they win these suits in the future?
Absolutely. Yeah, those are the agreement. And we've seen that through the financial reporting that he has had to do in his cabinet position. He said he's going to divest, but there actually is no timeline on that. So he could do it on the last day that he's secretary and he'd still be following through. That is a thing that always happens in politics, but at least with him, it's very transparent. It's easy to follow. Anybody can look it up on any of the government websites. You can kind of look at this stuff. And this is the same organization and law firm, Morgan & Morgan, that has also launched lawsuits against whom? Oh, that's right, Tylenol and their partner company. So there's just a lot of stuff that we probably should begin to uncover that's related to this. Again, this kind of method of suing big companies to get some kind of payout is a Democratic position. It always has been a tool of Democratic Party politics. And these are law firms that mostly overwhelmingly donate to the Democratic Party and to progressive causes. So it's just yet another reason we should put a big old question mark on RFK in 2026.
Yael Osowski with the Consumer Choice Center. You can catch that commentary at realclearpolitics.com. Earlier this week, President Trump posted to his Truth Social account that he wants a credit card interest rate cap put in place as of next week. He wants to cap those rates at 10%. Now, if Joe Biden proposed a similar initiative, which has been supported over the years by the Bernie Sanders and the AOCs of the world, when we talk about price controls on interest rates, do you feel like the MAGA crowd would be calling him a socialist?
Absolutely. Yeah, you definitely would have had a lot of that criticism. And it's the same criticism that Bernie Sanders got when he introduced the bill last year that had to do with exactly this at the same 10% APR level. It's a bit weird for Trump. Maybe he's out on his affordability gambit at the moment. I don't know who whispered in his ear about this, but this one took me for a turn because I wrote about it. We put up an analysis on our website on the Consumer Choice Center. And I thought, you know, it was just Bernie Sanders that we were writing a critique against, but it seems the president has joined the fray. So I guess now we'll have to do a little bit more analysis and get this out there to be sure that Trump understands that this is not going to help the average person. It's definitely not going to help people who are low and middle income and actually would make things harder.
And when it comes to things like the very popular reward programs, right, I mean, where does those interest rates and payments go to? Well, those rewards that you often enjoy to get a flight or a rental car or whatever it might be, when you hit that level where you can then do some purchasing based on what you're spending on your credit card. All right, and you've got some ideas. Rather than blocking tens of millions of Americans from potentially accessing credit cards over at ConsumerChoiceCenter.org, what are some of the recommendations that you would prefer to be used rather than capping interest rates at 10%?
I think we have to promote a lot more of these personalized payment plans. You know, a lot of different credit cards, banks, loans, even if you use things like Klarna or any of these, you are able to have these personalized repayment plans that are not at the rather high APRs that would be something like 19, 20, 25%. You can actually do that. You can ask for it. I think there's got to be a lot more promotion. I think most consumers don't know that you can actually ask for that if you just call your bank or credit card company. I think we need a lot more transparency on what those rates are. People see that on their credit card bills every month, at the very bottom of the statement, which balance is subjected to which APR. I think there's got just a lot more transparency is needed so that people understand the rates. People don't really understand APR, what that means. It's the interest rate divided by 12, and that's essentially what the balance is being subjected to every month. And I actually really like everything that people like Dave Ramsey have been doing, people like Caleb Hammer on YouTube who've been doing a lot of financial education. Our financial education in the United States is pretty poor. It was not a part of my high school curriculum there in outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. And I think we need a lot more emphasis on that. There's a lot of financial literacy issues generally, people not understanding debt, people not understanding balancing checkbooks or what comes in, what goes out. I think we have a lot to improve there. If we're just going to be capping the interest rate on credit cards, all we're kind of doing is cutting off people from the broader credit system. And we know from Europe, where they have very similar caps, people don't have access to credit in the same way. They're not able to afford the same life. And if emergencies happen, they don't have this vast network of credit cards that they can depend on. They have to turn to wealthy family members or figure out ways in a much shadier lending model. So I think the U.S. model right now, we can always improve it. And there are good, actionable things we can do. But I think putting a cap on the interest rates would really obliviate credit cards and the use of credit for so many Americans.
All right, with that said, you talk about financial literacy and you not receiving that sort of education while you were at secondary school here during your time in the States. Well, with that being said, the number of American adults who read below a sixth grade level is at its highest level, more than 50% ever of American adults read below the equivalent of a sixth grade reading level. So how is someone going to figure out an APR interest rate or you know, what even net and gross income is when they cannot read above sixth grade as an adult here in the United States?
Absolutely true. And, you know, that we've put so much money into the federal education system, which is still a state-based thing. And I know on your show, Joe, you've had a lot of educational champions who talk about the need for, you know, the state government to take a lot more initiative to embrace competitive options like charter schools, magnet schools, things where you actually have money following the students rather than just gorging the schools so they can build new ones or pay off teacher unions. There's a lot that can be done, localizing, introducing competition. You know, if I had the opportunity today, I'd open up a nice private school, you know, that my daughters could go to and enjoy and have much better education and choice. I'm not in that position now, but it's definitely something I would love to do. And I think many Americans are looking towards, because you're absolutely right, our educational outcomes right now are just not looking tip top.
All right, a few things before I let you go, and we've got to make it quick, but we've got some comments on the text line. In terms of the credit card caps, how is that not going to help the low and middle income earners out there by having a lower interest rate instead of paying a high interest, dragging out payments for years? Why not have credit cards to be paid down in a short amount of time, which then in their eyes would leave more money on the table for everyday expenses?
Well, A, people should always pay their bills every month so they don't pay interest at all. That's one thing. But B, if we are capping the interest rates, that means that people who have lower credit, you know, so if you look at your credit score right now and it's under, let's say, something like 600, you're just not even going to get access to any credit card. You're not going to have any ability to get a credit card, to have any kind of credit. So your APR is basically zero because you would get nothing. So that's what we've seen examples in the state of Illinois and in the nation of Chile. They implemented caps on credit card interest rates. And what happens is you cut off a segment of the population from access to credit. And that is essentially what would happen with this cap scenario. Obviously, there are a lot of people who use credit cards. A lot of people pay them off. Some don't. But we can't just say that, oh, a lot of people are spending recklessly, therefore we must make the system worse for everyone. It's just not a solution, and it's definitely not something that people who use credit cards responsibly would benefit from. And even those who are, as I mentioned, low credit worthiness, or lower end of the scale, they're not going to have more opportunities. They're going to have less, and that means they're going to have to go to payday loan checkers. They're going to have to go figure out where they can get money on the cheap, and sometimes that's the loan sharks in the streets, as you know well from New Jersey.
Yeah, Yael, as we wrap it up, one of the texters just in regards to the RFK sort of conflict right there, saying, hey, we need to sue the food companies and others who are poisoning us, whether that be pharmaceutical companies or whatnot. The point you're trying to make is the fact that RFK is tied up in all sorts of essentially backroom investments that he's been a part of for a long, long time. And while his intent may be good, this guy's going to make some money in the back end off of all this.
Yeah, precisely. And it's a, you know, it's a thing that happens in D.C. And, you know, just because RFK is a different flavor of the month and seems incredibly different and not a swamp monster, it doesn't mean that he himself is guilty. I mean, if you look at President Trump's family and his administration, there's a lot of stuff you could say about certain deals and things. And I think that's why journalism is important and criticism is important, because if MAGA is going to stand for anything, if, you know, being in charge of the American Republic is going to stand for anything, that means we have to be skeptical. And I think that should be applied to RFK or anyone else who's in the government.
That's why we appreciate your insight, Yael Lisowski, always making folks think and stir up the conversation. And that's why we bring you on almost weekly here on the Hot Talk Morning Show. I know you'll be up in D.C. next week and over in New York. So let's schedule some time to call back in once you're in the States. All right?
Absolutely, Jeff. All the best to you and all the listeners.
ConsumerChoiceCenter.org. You can read more about those credit card interest rate caps through their website and also at RealClearPolitics.com, taking a deep dive into the ties-in that RFK Jr. has with some of these big law firms that are filing lawsuits everywhere around the country, poised to make potentially millions of dollars off of these sorts of things.